Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh-Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down
at the Roundtable.
Welcome back to our Creative Placemaking series. This time we're going to identify elements for your creative placemaking project.
We are so corny. Absolutely. But we do have fun.
So we're going to start at home. We want you to look at your community for inspiration. And Alice and I came up with the following list. Look at what is your community's history? What put it on the map in the first place? What is it doing now? Two, what is it known for, past and present? So is it industrial? Is it agricultural? Is it transportation focused, urban, rural? You know, what is the situation demographically, ethnically, racially? Is it diverse? Is it not diverse? Look at what it's known for. And number three, how do you want the world to see your community?
And think world, think global, think big. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. No, yeah. We've been working hard on that.
We've been working hard on that, yeah.
Right. That answer may emphasize the historical context, or maybe you want to change how it's perceived.
Yeah.
But basically, you need to have a goal in mind. And number four, how can all of that, though, that we just talked about, be turned into an arts project? What types of arts projects fit with your vision for the world's perception of your community? And keep several end product options in mind at this point. Basically, after you've discussed all that stuff, that will help you identify the end product that you're going to produce.
Yes, and in this, in the next couple of episodes, we're going to share some information about two of our arts projects as examples that speak to some of those considerations. The two projects are our annual submissions-driven book publication, The Polkster Review, and you get the first look at the 2020 edition. Ta-da. With this lovely new colorful cover that, hey, looks just like that painting. Awesome.
And guess who made it? For those of you who are not watching the video, was Alice.
That was Alice, yeah. And if you're not watching the video, you don't get to see the book cover. Okay. And the other project that we do every year is our annual classic literature-based project, NICE, mm-hmm. Noblesville Interdisciplinary Creativity Expo. So, Sarah E., let's start with the discussion. Let's start the discussion by looking at issues in the community and our project, The Polk Street Review.
Right, and this was my favorite part of putting together this episode, was thinking through, what is it that we're really addressing with Polk Street Review? What community need are we addressing?
What makes it relevant?
Right, exactly.
You know, why would people want to buy this book?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, hey, it's
hopefully we have positive answers.
Yeah. Right, yes. Because, yeah. I mean, it's cool to get people in print, absolutely.
Yeah.
But yes, what else is it addressing?
Yeah.
And so the way I phrased that in my head was, what issue is Hamilton County facing right now? Because Noblesville is part of Hamilton County.
Yep.
And how does the Polk Street Review address it? And so I would say, that one of our big issues is rapid growth.
Yes.
Hamilton County is the fastest growing county in Indiana. Actually, it's one of the fastest growing counties in the country right
now. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it is. So, Indiana, in the past, we've had a lot of residents move away. I remember when I was a kid, we called that the brain drain.
Yeah. I think that phrase has been around for a long time, because yes. I'm older than you. Yeah.
I always kind of liked it. It was a nice alliteration or rhyming there.
Yeah, brain drain.
Right. But we have started in some pockets of Indiana to kind of have the opposite. Mm-hmm. So, we now have people moving into the state. Mm-hmm. And so, some counties are growing now. And by, I think it was 2050, Hamilton County is going to be like second largest in Indiana.
Yikes.
And so that comes with pros and cons.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, I'm responsible for part of that boom because right after college, I moved up here and now I'm in an apartment where I look outdoors, and it's a mixed blessing because there's construction going on starting at 7 in the morning, but there's also a beautiful new amphitheater and I can hear music from my back porch.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that transition that this county is in and the huge influx of growth that we've had.
Yeah. You're so funny, responsible for the boom.
Now, Alice, you've been here in Hamilton County since you were a kid.
Yeah.
So Can you tell us about some of those changes you've
seen? Yes. Well, my family moved to Noblesville from Columbus, Georgia in the mid-1970s. I am so old. When I was in seventh grade. So how many of our audience, I don't know, is going to relate to life in the 1970s anywhere, but from Columbus, Georgia to Noblesville was quite a move. At the time, Polk Street and 8th, what was the street in Noblesville that's named 8th Street now was originally named Polk Street. And it had historic heritage railroad tracks running alongside and down the middle of it. Freight trains ran, you know, several times a day back in the 70s, as well as the tourist trains like the one that went to the State Fair. Those ran all the time. Old Town Noblesville, which is what we call the kind of, now it's called the Cultural Arts District, kind of around the historic courthouse square. It had a lot of charm, Old Noblesville, but not many of the older homes back in the 70s and 80s were restored the way they are now. And suburban neighborhoods were springing up everywhere, just outside of the main part of downtown Noblesville, you know. And my family moved into one of those on the city's south end off of Allisonville Road, if you're familiar with the area. Back in the 70s, when we moved up here, I would have to say Noblesville was not a very diverse city. People described Noblesville in those days as one of the white flight kind of suburbs of Indianapolis, similar to Carmel. Not the best appellation, not real proud of that, you know. But on a more positive note, Noblesville at the time then had a genuine great small town atmosphere. That historic courthouse square was kind of like the hub. It was, there aren't very many old courthouses like that around.
It's beautiful.
And it was the tallest building in town. You could see the beautiful top of it from miles away in every direction. The old courthouse was actively used for the seat of Hamilton County, so it had all the court proceedings and city offices, Noblesville city offices, until 1992 when the new judicial center was built. Now, see, that tells my age, because to me it's still the new judicial center, and it was built in 1992. So the new judicial center took out an entire string of businesses on the square's west side. So everything that was over there, including there was a bar, there was, I don't even know what else there was. I know there was a bar because I went to it. You know, when I'd come home from college, we'd go to the bar, you know, the club. But all those are gone. And at the same time, in the 90s, city government offices moved to a wonderful old brick building on the corners of Connor and 10th Street, a building that up until that time had been the Noblesville Library. And I worked in that library briefly in the 1980s, by the way, just a little personal history there. The old building was renovated and expanded, and a second parking lot was put in where Clancy's Hamburgers used to be. And I mention Clancy's because I know some of the audience will be like, oh, Clancy's, we miss them so much. I mention all those development changes, the judicial center, the use of the old courthouse, the mayor's, the city offices and the mayor's offices moving into the old library, which meant a new library was built, all that stuff, because they were all instigated by Noblesville's growth. Growth that had expanded exponentially through the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. And the growth and development we are seeing in Noblesville now, and in Hamilton County in general, is similar. For example, currently, last year, the historic train tracks were torn out of 8th Street, and a high-rise parking garage is under construction one block off of the square that will, unfortunately and sadly, block from the southwest that beautiful view of the top of the historic courthouse building. These development projects, all in the name of growth, take away a little bit from that small-town feel of our downtown district, but all change is not bad. Or I should say, not all change is bad. I don't know, I didn't say that very well. If anyone had told me back in the day that Noblesville would ever be a cultural arts district designated by the state of Indiana with support and a call for arts-related anythings, I would have said, no way. But here we are. Noblesville is a little more diverse and a lot more artsy than I could have ever imagined as a kid. So
I'm just curious, Alice, from your own anecdotal observations, do you feel that Hamilton County is more ethnically, racially diverse?
I think it is more than, especially in the 70s when we first moved up here. When I was in high school, junior high and high school, I think there were no Latino families that I can think of. Mm-hmm. There might have been one. There were three or four African-American families. Mm-hmm. in my grade level. Now, if there were other, you know, children in different grades that I was unaware of, I'm talking about, yeah, I don't know about you guys, but when I was in high school, I pretty much only knew, like, my grade and, you know, a couple grades up above and below me. That was it. So, and I don't remember any, like, Muslim people or, I mean, not a lot of Asian people. So now I think there's a lot more diversity. I think we have a long way to go. Don't get me wrong. I think, you know, especially Noblesville and probably other parts of Hamilton County, I think, you know, European, white, Caucasian heritage is still dominant, you know, way dominant. And, you know, it would be nice if we could see, especially in local politics and everything, if we could see a little more diversity.
For sure.
Even just more women would be nice, you know? Sorry, but that's how I feel. I'm going to be honest. Anecdotal. I'm being anecdotal, you know? But definitely, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where, as a kid, you see, I mean, I moved up here from Columbus, Georgia, which was very racially mixed. I mean, I went to high school, I wasn't in high school there, junior high, you know, because we moved when I was in seventh grade. So the junior high and my grade school and everything was racially mixed. Segregation and desegregation had kind of occurred while I lived in Georgia. Georgia was one of the very last holdouts for desegregation. And I remember when the buses brought the first African-American kids to our schools. And this was in the, you know, the 70s.
Right.
That's way after Brown v. Board of Education, you know, so it took a while. You know, but still, I mean, it wasn't like I experienced, you know, only white people in Columbus, Georgia. And when we moved up here, it was a very different feel. It was a very, you know, the Hoosier hospitality was a big thing. It still is. That's a known thing. Everybody was very friendly. But there were some invisible walls. You know, there were some invisible blockages. And even as a kid, I could feel those because I'd come from such a more diverse place. So,
right. Sure, sure. I guess the reason that's in my head is I've been trying to think through in other projects I do in Hamilton County too, but this can relate to what we're doing for our creative placemaking.
Yes.
Is what to do to embrace that increasing diversity.
And welcome people. And, and I don't want to say, you know, I used to teach at, you know, at university, so I say things like, and educate people, and that sounds very pompous, and I don't mean it that way, but a lot of people who don't know anyone from another cultural background don't want, it's not like, I shouldn't say they're afraid, but they it's just too much otherness, too much difference. So if you can bring people together so that they can learn about each other and get to know each other as human beings and as individuals, that crosses cultural boundaries and I think, and ethnic boundaries and all that. And I think that's so important. And when you're thinking about creative placemaking, you have to look at your community, see what color is it, or, you know, what colors are, you know, are there. And then, and, you know, try and see, is that all I have to work with, or can I expand? Can I make it different? Can my project impact a better identity or something? And I think some, you know, that's not always gonna be true for every community. A lot of communities are very embracing and very welcoming. And we also have to remember that it's not just about color, you know. When you're talking about being inclusive, you're talking about people with disabilities, you're talking about you know, I mean, it's, you know, all kinds of
right.
all
and
kinds
sexual of orientation.
Sexual orientation. Right. Yes, thank you for filling in my brain, my brain glitch there. Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, there's a lot that you want to look at and and see. But if you don't know what your community looks like now, then it's going to be very hard to visualize what you want it to help it become. And that may or may not be part of your creative placemaking.
Right.
For us, I think it's always in our minds, and we want that inclusive kind of, you know, learn about each other, know people as individuals and not stereotype and all that kind of thing.
Sure.
And so I think that's very important to us in our creative placemaking, but it may or may not fit in with your projects.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And sorry to lead us down this rabbit trail.
That's what we're here for. Yeah.
Right. But yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I have really loved about Poke Street Review is it does make a lot of voices. It gives them that platform.
Yes, and I think people, especially people who like to write. Now, we have in our Poke Street Review, we do have three categories. One is poetry and song lyrics. One is images, so that would be artwork of any kind. And the third one is prose. So within those milieus, those genres, those mediums, whatever you want to call them, people love to express and tell stories. We get memoirs, we get incredibly just wrenching poems and heartfelt, you know, it's like they really pour their hearts out in these things. And you get to see the real person. You know, and a lot of different voices from age, from life experience, from, you know, ethnic or cultural backgrounds. It's really fascinating that people who are creative and artistic are able to give of themselves that way in those kind of private personal parts of their lives and share family stories and stuff. And so that to me is what makes a community strong. And I feel like that's one of the reasons the Polk Street Review is such a great creative placemaking project, because we're publishing people's stories, words, images, and that helps our community, I think. This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org.
This activity made possible in part with support from the Indiana Arts Commission and the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.